Well, good morning, everybody. Lenny Lawson here, the Car Guru. I'm glad to be with you again this morning, and I am also want to congratulate you. Really want to congratulate us as people. Not for, you know, we're in Tennessee. We're not in Virginia. We're not in New Jersey. We're not where, you know, the most recent elections took place. But I'm not congratulating anybody in particular except us as people, because, you know, the thing is, if we don't like the way things are going, we do have the power to change it. You know, the issue that I have most of the time about change is I'm the biggest obstacle to it because, you know, we get into these patterns of sometimes they're called ruts, you know. I heard a slogan many years ago that said, the difference between a rut and a grave is that you can get out of a rut. And that's true. Sometimes we get just, you know, right up there to the edge of it, and then we slide right back in. And that applies to a lot of things in life. But sometimes you just need something, enough momentum, to get you up over the hump and get you into a new, maybe a plateau. Let's not call it another rut. So that's something for us to congratulate ourselves as American people, is that if we don't like something, we can change it. And guaranteed this, there's always going to be somebody that disagrees with you. And, you know, right now the political landscape is treacherous. And, you know, it's best for people like me, people in business and stuff, to steer clear, even though sometimes with a platform like this, I'm tempted to say what's on my mind sometimes when I should not. I don't really want to offend anybody because this is a show about cars, you know, and it's about the car business and how things work and how people can get taken advantage of. One of the things that I'm excited about is the Guru School of Defensive Car Buying and Car Service. Today, we're going to delve a little bit into car service and the pitfalls that you can fall into. You know, it's really, I always recommend to people that they have certain key folks in their life, key professionals that they can contact when they need help. You know, somebody that's, you know, if they're not in your favorites on your phone, they're just close. Maybe they graduate to favorites. Some of them would rather not be favorites. I know my doctor sometimes used to get tired of me calling him about little stuff. And he said, Lenny, you know, you really just need to call the office. And I said, okay, I get it. You want me to quit bugging you. Fine. But, you know, it's nice to have somebody that's a professional that you can deal with. You know, if you deal a lot in business, it's nice to have a lawyer on call. If you have a legal question, if you are, you know, concerned about state laws and things that are going on in state government. You know, sometimes we have to lobby our position. It's nice to know a congressman or a state representative. It's nice to know a plumber. You know, plumbers and state representatives have a lot in common. They deal with, no, I better not go there. What else? It's good to have an electrician. Of course, you know, a lot of people try to do that kind of stuff themselves. It's good to have somebody that can work on your cars, you know, whether it's an independent shop or whatever. I think the important thing there, though, when it comes to our cars is we have to understand the limitations of the people that we're dealing with. If you have a good mechanic that you like, he's independent, maybe he even just works on cars in his garage behind his house. You know, they can take care of a lot of things, especially depending on their skill levels. If they were a master GM mechanic or Toyota or something, they can do just about everything. What's going to limit them when they get away from the dealership is they're not going to have access to the tools and equipment, because that does make a difference. If I were to take you on a tour of my service department, an in-depth tour, you would either be bored out of your mind or fascinated, because it's just unbelievable the amount of tools that I have to buy. Every time they come out with a new model like the Bronco Sport or the Bronco or the Mach-E Mustang, I have to buy new tools. It's a tool package, and guess what? It's not like I go to the Orvis catalog and order them. I think I'll have that. Ooh, that would look good on me. No, it's not like that at all. This is, they show up, and you get a bill. and you have to pay it because it's on your Ford account statement. And if you don't pay that, then you are no longer a Ford dealer. That's pretty serious. So the tools and equipment make a huge difference. One of the things that we had to buy for the Mach-E Mustang is kind of interesting. It is basically a scissor lift that you use to take the battery out of the vehicle. Now, the battery weighs 1,200 pounds, so it's a significant part, a component of an electric car. And so when you need to service individual battery cells or replace the whole unit, you know, then you got to have something to be able to take it out and be able to work on it. But since I'm a Nissan dealer, guess what else I had to buy? Yep, I had to buy the exact same tool for Nissan. Did they care that I was a Ford dealer and already had one? Nope. They said no. You know, when you signed your dealer sales and service agreement, you agreed to buy anything we want to send you. And so I got another one, and it's here as well. I tell you, I had a neat experience yesterday. Well, neat. It was just unusual. We are actually on a map now since we've installed battery chargers on the outside of our dealership. We have, we're showing up on some kind of a electrical map where if somebody's traveling, it'll show the gateway has some chargers. And so we're just kind of sitting in the showroom yesterday evening, and this guy pulls up in a Mustang Mach-E. It's maroon or kind of a reddish color, ruby, I think is what it's called. We didn't sell it. We knew we did. It had out-of-state tags. They backed up right beside our Nissan charger, which will plug right into the Ford as well, and plugged right up, just sat there in their car and just, read the paper and talked to them. I said, isn't that interesting? You know, they didn't even come in and ask me if I was willing to pay for their electricity. They just plugged right in. So I really don't know what the guidelines are with that. I don't know whether to put a coin-operated, vendor-type thing on the outside, say put in three-quarters and, have at it. The problem with that charger is that it is all the chargers that I have outside, which is a total of four, two for Nissan, two for Ford, is that they are level two chargers. Level one charger, I may have these backwards, but I think level one charger is the weakest. That's like 110 outlet. If you charge an empty battery, it's going to take about 3 or 4 days to give you a full charge, maybe longer than that. If you put in level two charger, that's a 240 and kind of like a 220 outlet, 220, 240. You know, they're about the same thing. You plug that in, it takes about 8 hours to get a full charge. So I don't know. Maybe they were just willing to sit for a while. I left before they left, so I didn't say anything to them. Now, a level three charger is the direct current charger. That's the one that like the Tesla superchargers and the other direct current chargers, they'll throw the electrons into your electric vehicle at a rapid pace. And so you can charge on a level three charger. They say that you can charge a Mach-E Ford in, 40 minutes to 80%. And then if you want it 100%, I don't know why they always say it that way. They said, you can get 40 minutes to 80%. Well, I don't care how long it takes to get it to 80%. I want to get it to 100%. I don't ever go to the gas station and put 3/4 of a tank of gas in my car unless I don't have enough money. And then, I might back off a little bit, but I'm going to fill her up. So I don't know how long that takes. Longer, I guess. Too long for me. I'm not patient enough. I'm not buying an electric vehicle. Oh, by the way, folks, if you know anybody wanting the all new Ford Bronco, we took about 54 orders of those. And recently we've had a couple people say, I'm tired of waiting. Problem is those cars are already, matter of fact, they're already in the plant. They're getting built. We've got a few. If you're interested in one of the new Broncos, feel free to call me. You can call me on my cell phone, 423-552-2020. I never thought I'd be saying that, because I thought the entire production for us through 2022 would be sold out. But then a couple people, they just said, I'm not waiting anymore. And I understand it. I get it. Abby's getting really impatient. She's had one ordered for, 8 months. And it's built. It's sitting in a parking lot. And they can't get enough truck drivers to be able to ship all the cars that they have produced now. So that's another problem. That whole shipping thing has totally changed from what it used to be. At one time, there were two or three carriers that shipped all the vehicles for all the car dealers in the United States. And now they don't have those anymore. They use a lot of independents. And they'll grab anybody. They'll grab some guy driving a rickshaw. Say, can you pull a car to Greenville? I don't think Abby would care. She just wants her black two-door, seven-speed manual transmission Bronco. That just doesn't sound like her, does it? But she likes them. She likes her black SUVs. I said, why don't you get another color? Nope, got to have black. I said, I bet I know one other thing. What's that? You're going to put dark tint in the windows. Absolutely. See, that's a generational thing. That's not me. So anyway, that's some of the things that are going on around here at Gateway and in guru world. But when I come back, I'm going to talk about some things that you need to do when you go in for automotive service. I don't care if it's under warranty or it's customer pay. You know, you're paying for it or whatever. There's a couple things you need to understand about automotive service, and I'll get into that here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, my first job in the dealership was cleaning out the center drain in the shop. It had grates over it. It was like this sunken, recessed drain that ran down the middle of the shop. It was about a foot wide, maybe a little wider than that, as I recall. It had these big steel grates. They were hard to lift off. And so Dad sent me out to the shop and said, yeah, go do what the service manager says. And I said, okay. So I said, Mr. Landers, what would you like for me to do today? He said, well, you see that big drain down the middle of the shop? I need you to clean it out. And I said, okay. And he said, you'll need that scoop over there, and you'll need that wheelbarrow over there. So I went and got the scoop and the wheelbarrow and lifted that off, and that was the nastiest stuff I have ever seen in my life. I didn't learn anything about car service. I just learned how nasty a shop can be because of all the junk that comes off of cars. And then back then, you know, I had a lot of technicians who were tobacco spitters, and so I had to deal with that. No fun. But I did the job, and I smiled and, you know, took all the joking and all that stuff. Eventually, I got to the point where I could write a repair order and talk to customers and halfway understand what I was talking about. And so I learned a lot about service. I learned the kind of things that cause problems that customers don't like, and where they get confused, how women truly do feel like they're looked down on sometimes when they go in the service department, like the service advisor doesn't, you know, think the woman knows anything about cars, when a lot of the time they're wrong, but a lot of the time they're right. And so you have to be very careful how you explain things. So that's the kind of things that I learned at the School of Hard Knocks. Because I can tell you, when I first started at the Chevy store, my mentors were not really good mentors, except one guy. One guy was. The others were just not, you know, their customer service skills were amounted to this. Somebody walks in, they said, can I help you? They say, I need to get my oil changed. Well, we're booked up. You know, it was just, it wasn't really good. So I learned that was not the way to do it. But I do have some advice for you. If you take your car in to get it serviced, there's some certain defensive things that you can do. Number one, if you are under warranty, and you have an issue, you bring it in for a problem, make sure to tell the service advisor to write a repair order up. You want to write a repair order, and you want to sign it. And I don't care if they just want to check it out. Now, if they're just going to take it, drive it down the street, and they can't work on it that day, that's different. But if you're going to leave the car there, make sure you get a repair order written and that you sign something. Because too often, a car dealership will have a customer that has a problem, and they've come in three or four times, but they only have one record of it because they only wrote one repair order. And then you go to the factory later on and you say, you know, this vehicle may qualify for the lemon law. Well, it's only been in here one time, according to the documentation. Documentation matters as much when you're getting a car serviced as it does, especially under warranty, as it does when you are buying a car. So that's very important. Okay, second thing. When I learned how to be a service advisor, I learned that about the three C's, and that is complaint, cause, and correction. Those three things are supposed to be itemized on every repair order. If so you go in and you say, "Yeah, I've got this weird vibration in my steering. It just all of a sudden started, and my I don't feel it in my seat. I just feel in the steering wheel. Steering wheel shaking." And a service advisor, if he knows what he's doing, he'll say, "Well, does it do it at a particular speed?" And you may say, "Well, yes, it does it at around 60 miles an hour." And then does it go away then? Yes. Are there any other noises associated with it? No. Does it do it when you hit your brakes? Does the steering wheel shake when you hit? No, it doesn't. So all of these questions lead a service advisor to not necessarily a conclusion, because it still has to be checked out, but it leads him to narrow it down for the technician so that he can tell the tech what needs, what the customer is complaining about. So that is the complaint. Now, when you leave, you either go to the customer lounge or you're going home or whatever. The service advisor then gets with the technician and he explains to them what it was doing and when it was doing it. You know, if the service advisor, if you go in, for example, and you say, "Well, I've got this vibration," they say, "Okay, vibration," and they write that on a repair order. If you leave and it just says vibration, very possible that vibration won't be found or fixed. You have got to be specific. Okay, when does it do it? Is it like in the morning when it's cool temperatures? Is it hot when it's hot? Does it do it at speed? Does it vary with speed? You know, these are things that if the service advisor doesn't ask you those questions, then you need to pass that information along and make sure that they document it, because the technician can't fix it if he doesn't know what it's doing. Now, he could take it on a test drive, but maybe he doesn't get fast enough. Maybe if you say it's vibrating at 65 miles an hour and when they go and the speed limit in front of the dealership is 45, and he said, "Well, I'm not driving 65 miles an hour, I might get a ticket." But you have to make sure that they duplicate it under the similar circumstances. So he hands the repair order to the technician. He tells them accurately what it's doing. And he gets in the car, which he should, on a vibration. Any kind of drivability issue should always be test-driven. Another thing, always note your miles before you leave the dealership. Just write it down on your hand or however you do it. Put it in your phone. Note the miles. Because sometimes they will tell you that they have test-driven something and they have not, because it has no extra miles on it. "Well, we drove it all over Greenville. We couldn't get it to do it." No, you didn't. I noted the miles. I had 71,241 miles on it, and now it has 71,241 miles on it and one-tenth. They didn't drive your car. So, you know, that might be an indication you need to talk to the service manager. But, let them prove to you, you know, what they did or did not do. So anyway, the technician takes it out for a spin, gets it up to 65, feels the vibration. He says, "Well, that feels like a tire vibration." So he goes back to the dealership, and he looks to see if any of the wheel weights might have fallen off. And if that's the case, he'll probably balance the two front tires, since he just feels it in the steering wheel, doesn't feel it in the seat. He balances the two front tires, takes the old weights off, puts the new ones on, spins them, everything's smooth as silk, puts them back on the car, takes it for another test drive. How does he know he fixed it if he doesn't take it for another test drive? That's why you need to check your miles. And then he comes back and he says, "Well, it was the tires, and their tire wear is fine, everything's good. While I was under there, I checked all this. You know, you always want them to use a checklist to check a bunch of other things. We always do that on our customer cars. Even if you came in just to have your tires balanced, we're going to check your oil. You know, we're going to check your tire pressures. We're going to look at the condition of your brakes. If we see a hose that's leaking or something, we're not going to go ahead and fix it. We're going to call you first. Don't you want us to do that?" You know, I've had customers complain, "I didn't ask you to do any of that stuff." Well, you didn't have to. Well, did you charge me for it? No, that's just something that we do. Oh, okay. So I feel like it's our fiduciary responsibility as a car business at a service center to fully inspect every customer's car. Now, we're not going to, check your coolant level of protection unless you ask us to. But if we see a coolant leak and we suspect there's an issue, we'll probably check it and then call you until you, you know, this, your coolant is degraded. It won't, it'll only protect you down to about 20 degrees. And so we recommend, you know, flushing your system and replacing the coolant. How much is that going to cost? Well, you tell them and they'll decide whether to do it or not. I think that's being a good car dealer or a good service center. So we know what the cause was, or we know what the complaint was. We know what the cause was, and now we know what the correction is. And I'm going to take my last break. I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, at the school, at the Defensive School of Car Service, that's down the hall from the School of Car Buying, you learn that there are preventative measures that you can take. You know, some of the responsibility of quality service, of being treated right and stuff, is on the consumer, unfortunately. You know, you go to a restaurant and, you know, your water glass gets empty. And nobody, you know, you're sitting there eating some hot, spicy food and, you know, you keep looking around and it affects your experience, doesn't it? I mean, I'm looking out. So where is that waitress, you know, or that waiter? I need some water. I'm on fire. And they're nowhere to be seen. That affects the tip, doesn't it? And so if they come back to the table and say, well, you know, I really would have enjoyed this glass of water when I had flames shooting out of my mouth 5 minutes ago. And they need to know that. That helps them get better if they're listening. You know, they may go back in the back and cuss you, but more than likely they won't. We love it when our customers are very communicative with us, that they're giving us feedback, you know, because that's the only way we got better. I found out that we were drifting as far as how long it took us to do an oil change, and it was just getting not good. And I said, guys, we got to do something. So we're in the process of deciding where we're going to put additional lifts, what kind of process we're going to change. We're probably going to go to two-man teams on oil changes So in other words, when one person will be doing part of the oil change and the other person will be doing the inspection and stuff like that. So we have two people on one car, and instead of getting it done in 30 minutes, it'll take, you know, maybe 18 minutes or 20 minutes to get an oil change. That's the way it should be. At no sacrifice in quality, that's the important thing. So, you know, feedback is important, and if you have a relationship with somebody in business, or, you know, just like all those other fields that we were talking about, it's good to be able to give them feedback when they don't do it right, but also to give them praise when they do. And I think that's something that we all forget to do sometimes. That's just part of being human. Would you agree with that? Well, thank you for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. We're going to talk about some more service issues tomorrow. We're going to talk about extended warranties, or extended service contracts. When you have one, you know, what you can expect. We're going to talk about some of the warranty scams that are out there that people are suffering through, and a few other topics when it comes to automotive service and some of the latest things that are going on with the chip shortage. So we'll do that tomorrow, and I'll see you then. Thanks for listening.